Sloane froze. She told Vidian she'd allow nothing to interfere with the explosives delivery, and they'd sent more than his project needed. But how much more?
Tell our pilot to stick with the ship he's convoying as best he can until our reinforcements arrive. Tell him if he can run interference...
Never mind, Collie said, removing his headset. Renegade One just shot our pilot down.
Sloane clenched her fists.
Pull all escort wings in that area off their duty. Send them all against Kanan.
Against who, Captain?
Renegade One!
Quaking in anger, she pointed outside.
The guy's shooting at everyone!
Chapter 50. Kanan checked his sights again as Hera banked expedient into another S-turn. She'd been weaving between the injection tower on the Sindon surface and the landing area nearby, where tracked Imperial ground vehicles were moving beradium canisters across the ice from the freighters. He wasn't about to target anything directly. Shooting the tower, Skelly had said, might set off the world-destroying reaction by accident, and killing mining workers in the freighters or on ice crawlers would make him no better than Vidian. Instead, he continued strafing the areas the workers had to cross, while preventing any more ships from landing. He wouldn't kill civilians, but he had nothing against scaring the daylights out of them for a good cause.
Not exactly an ideal way to raise a collective consciousness,
Hera said, as he fired another volley just beneath a freighter attempting a landing.
Recruit allies on your own time. This is getting attention. The Gorse way.
Trouble was, he was running out of targets.
Skelly, where's the next primary tower?
Forget it,
Hera snapped. Yanking on the control yoke, she sent a reluctant expedient into a groaning upward spiral. Kanan saw why as the ship twisted, a sky full of TIE fighters rocketing toward them. A loud beeping noise came from his gunnery controls. The indicator said the weapons turret was overheating. He looked at Hera and shook his head.
This thing's rated to move some pebbles around. That's about it.
I think our engines could go at any minute.
She sighed in exasperation as Expedient hurtled back toward orbit.
Safest thing on board is the Beradium.
It was a perversely lucky thing, Kanan thought. The many bumps, slams, and near misses Expedient had suffered would have set his regular cargo off in a heartbeat. The ridiculously more powerful baby on board had at least the benefit of containers that secured to the shelving. Gorse appeared in front of them again, with Forager hanging before it. Its spokes were open, a gigantic metal bloom at the front of the vessel. Kanan blanched at the size of it.
Can we take out that thing?
Hera checked her instruments and shook her head.
Big energy shield around it.
She pointed Expedient outward, away from the ever-approaching wave of TIE fighters. It gave them a better look at Forager from the side. That was about it. It was useless. Kanan released the gunnery controls. He left imprints on them with his hands, he saw. He rubbed his forehead.
Anybody else got a plan?
No one said anything for a moment. Then, a voice came from behind.
I think we can do plan two.
Kanan looked back to see Zaluna trying to squeeze past Skelly. She was looking outward, at Forager.
Which one was plan two? Kanan asked.
I thought plan two was slowing down the injection process,
Skelly said, hanging on to Hera's chair. Zaluna shook her head.
No, that's plan three. Plan one was informing on Count Vidian. Plan two was warning people. Plan three was slowing down the injection.
Can we stop this?
Hera pleaded. She nodded to the left and smiled politely at Zaluna.
TIE fighter fleet in 2 minutes, remember?
The woman pointed ahead at Forager.
Okay, look up there.
Behind the rimless wagon wheel that was the collection array stretched 7 globes, connected in a line. The one at the ship's front, nearest the spokes, had a lighted crew area at top, and a big round dish atop that.
That's an Imperial subspace transmitter.
I didn't see that, Kanan said. good eyes.
That's what they paid me for.
Zaluna grinned.
I can tap into the transept systems on that thing and send our warning to Gorse. They won't know to jam that.
Kanan stared.
That ship's where Vidian is now. We'd have to get you in there to do your thing.
Zaluna shrank a little at that, but didn't shirk.
I know.
And maybe we can even keep Vidian from sending the trigger command to Cinda,
Hera said.
Two for one, Kanan said. Happy hour.
You're going to want a stiff drink or two after this,
Hera said, bringing Expedient around in a wide arc. She looked at him.
This is not what you'd consider a safe bet. Are you sure you want to do this?
Kanan took a deep breath. It wasn't even a dare he'd take on his drunkest day.
It was insane.
But it had all been. And he had to admit, he'd felt better these past few days doing something, even a stupid something, than he'd felt in years of running.
I've got nothing else to do. Let's go for it.
All right.
Hera looked at the Sulliston.
Strap yourself in, Zal. Everybody else? Hang on!
Vidian had had quite enough of people telling him what he couldn't do. As a guild safety inspector, he'd given edicts to police, but had no power to enforce them, as his corrupt supervisors constantly undermined him. He'd transformed his image and position such that no one could say no to him. And yet people tried anyway, trying to protect their old ways of doing things. The gunslinger and his friends, it was obvious, were trying to prevent him from destroying the moon. Were they saboteurs working for Baron Danth? The Baron had set up the near impossible production threshold for Vidian to meet. He might well fear the acclaim success would give the Count. And Vidian knew the Baron had spies about, inquiring after Vidian's independent consultant, Lemuel Tharsa. If so, then Vidian was all the more ready to destroy the moon. No one would say no to him in this. He retained the upper hand now, through his logic and careful preparations. The berserk antics of the fool pilot had changed nothing. He'd added his own precautions to Skelly's scheme, and those included dispatching more Baradium haulers than were necessary. Already the redundant vessels were moving into the area reluctantly harried by the Renegade. It would only mean a little lost time. Not enough for the xenoboric acid to destroy the bombs he was implanting in the moon. It was the same kind of acid Lal had fallen into on Gorse. A refining necessity. Forager was full of the stuff. But it wouldn't devour his plan. And the one random variable was about to be cancelled out. The Runamuck freighter was out of space to roam, hemmed in between the collector ship's weapons and the swarm of TIE fighters now arriving on the scene. He'd thought of everything. It was his strength, his power. One day, the difference between success and failure for the Empire might be a simple thing someone else would overlook. It would not be his fault, and would never happen on his watch. He would see everything, and act.
We are at a safe distance from the target moon. Reorient to face it.
The engines thrummed, and Cinda came fully into glistening view. Vidian didn't bother to look at it for more than a second.
Give me an update on the enemy,
he commanded the nearest cybernetic assistant. Vidian never used the bald woman's name. It didn't seem necessary after her surgery.
The freighter has not attacked,
she droned.
It is circling, probing Forager's energy shield.
Is there a weakness?
No, my lord. The only gap in the energy shield is rewarded along the horizontal axis of the vessel. The thrusters produce a flux when ignited.
Vidian froze. The engines had just been activated a few moments earlier, and it was at the tail of the ship, above the thrusters, where the shipping bay sat.
open to space.
Proximity alarm. Unauthorized vessel on approach.
Bidian was already looking at the scene, his optical feed having been switched to the rear external cams. Pursued madly by half a dozen TIE fighters, and those were just the ones in firing range, the errant freighter raced toward Forager's aft.
What are you waiting for? All defensive turrets, fire!
Outside, Expedient rocketed through the crossfire toward the rear of Forager. Rows of landing bays perched atop and tucked beneath the glowing thrusters, open to space.
An open door's as good as an invitation,
Hera said. But the freighter was going far too fast, Kanan thought.
This'll be close!
At the last instant, Hera fired Expedient's attitude control jets, spinning the vessel around 180 degrees. The ship entered the bay tail first, piercing the magnetic screen. Hera fired the main thrusters, burning off speed, not to mention the chrome off any loader droids in their path. Expedient struck the landing surface, scraping noisily across the deck as it slid inward. It was a long hangar, and the freighter needed all of it to slow down. Kanan clutched the armrests, knowing the back wall had to be there somewhere. A violent jolt shook the vessel, rocking Count Bidian's underlings. Above, a droid slipped between the catwalk and the railing and fell to the main deck with a crash. Bidian, prepared for the impact, was unshaken.
All troops aboard, Forager, he transmitted. Stand by to repel boarders. Enough is enough.
Chapter 51.
We're still alive!
Skelly had said it, but Kanan was as amazed as anyone, and Hera was simply straightening her gloves as if nothing had happened.
You're incredible, Kanan said. I'm permanently moving to the passenger seat.
Time to get out of it.
Hera stood, checked her weapons, and made for the airlock.
Come on, Zal.
Zaluna took a deep breath and retrieved her pouch of electronic magic from behind the acceleration couch. She met Hera at the door. Bidian was almost certainly at the head of Forager, where the transmitter was.
Do you have anything else aboard we can use? Hera asked Kanan. We don't know the layout.
I think so.
Adjusting his holster, Kanan walked down the aisle to a storage compartment. He knelt before the bin and opened it. There, beside Skelly's bag of improvised explosives, which he'd hidden for safekeeping, was part of the Cinda emergency kit, a repelling gun with an automatic winder. He passed it to Hera. He was about to close the bin when he glanced at his traveling pack, the one he'd carried with him when leaving Gorse. A thought occurred to him, and he unzipped it and felt around for something inside. His lightsaber. It was there, hidden innocuously inside the canvas carrying case for a blaster rifle scope. Kanan hesitated for a moment before removing the case and strapping it to his left leg, opposite his holster. He wasn't going to use it, of course, but unlike on Calcaron Depot, the chances of the ship being searched were pretty good. He didn't want anyone to find it. He turned back to see Skelly watching him. For a moment, Kanan worried he would ask about the scope case. He had no rifle, after all. But he quickly realized Skelly was eyeing his bag of death.
I'm not having you blow us all up, Kanan said.
He lifted Skelly's bag.
This is coming with me for safekeeping.
You'll blow yourself up just carrying that.
Skelly forced himself to stand.
It's all right. Leave it. I'll go with you.
Kanan frowned.
You can barely walk.
So I can keep up the rear. Put that down and let's go.
Forager's interior was one huge automated factory floor, Kanan discovered. The seven spheres that formed the body of the ship intersected in a row, producing a single atrium several stories high that stretched forward out of sight. vats, centrifuges, conveyor belts, pneumatic tubes. It was a Denetrius Vidian production, if ever there was one. Standing at a railing overlooking the area, Hera momentarily marveled at the sight.
It's like someone crammed all of Moonglow's refineries into a starship.
Hurry, so we can save the real one, Kanan said.
He could see the stormtroopers down on the main floor now, running toward them from the far end. Metal stairs led down to what would be more than a kilometer of hard fighting, nearly the length of a Star Destroyer.
Can I go back and get my bombs?
Skelly said, panting at the railing. He'd fallen behind twice, and simply fallen once on the way here from the landing bays. Kanan shook his head and looked at Hera. She was staring up at the rafters.
What have you got?
Things are looking up, she said, pointing. There!
Kanan squinted. Up top, a tramcar track suspended from the ceiling ran the length of the room between two banks of industrial lighting. Kanan's eye traced back toward his location and the rungs of a ladder attached to the wall behind them, 15 meters high or more. The ladder was the only route to the tramcar. There was no way the repelling gun could carry more than one at a time. Hera had the idea. Kanan made the plan. It was how things were working out between them. Kanan sent Hera up the ladder first, having her stop at intervals to turn and provide cover fire, if necessary, against any arriving Imperials. Then he sent up Zeluna, who went without complaint. Heights were apparently one more thing Zeluna wasn't afraid of. Skelly was his problem. He'd figured the guy had to go up ahead of him or he'd never go at all, but it was making their progress impossibly slow. Skelly was in pain and reluctant to use his right hand for a grip.
Go on, Skelly!
Kanan yelled after the third time he tuckered out. Skelly dangled precariously, his right arm looped around a rung.
Just give me a...
Skelly never finished his statement. Blaster fire peppered the wall around him, causing him to lose hold.
Kanan grasped vainly at the man as he fell past, flailing.
Skelly!
The man fell outward, his body slamming against the railing of the balcony they'd been standing on earlier. Limply, Skelly fell over the side and out of sight, presumably toward the factory floor. High above, Hera opened fire on Skelly's attackers. Hanging partway off the ladder, Kanan craned his neck to see any sign of Skelly. He couldn't see anything. And now more shooters were moving into the area. Hera called down from above.
Kanan, come on!
Kanan scrambled up the ladder, narrowly escaping being shot several times in the process. Reaching the apex, he stepped out onto the short metal landing next to the parked tramcar. Hera was in it already, hanging over the front and looking down.
No sign of Skelly, she said.
She looked back, her face fraught.
I don't think he could have survived that.
Nothing to do, Kanan said, piling into the tramcar with the others. We'll look when we come back. If we come back. Let's move!
Once activated by Hera, the tramcar rattled along across hundreds of meters. It rode on a single rail, probably electrified, Kanan thought, attached to the ceiling by metal framing. Things went quietly for a minute, until the stormtroopers below tripped to where the intruders were. Then it was open season on the rafters. With blaster shots deflecting off the girders, the ceiling, even a few off the tramcar itself. Passing control of the vehicle to Zeluna, Hera and Kanan fired back. But the targets were too small and numerous, and they hadn't even traveled halfway across the factory floor.
We've got to do something before they bring out the heavy artillery, Hera said.
Kanan nudged her.
Check that out.
He pointed down and ahead to enormous cylinders on the factory floor, made of some kind of special clear composite. Inside was liquid, a shocking green in color.
Xenoboric acid, like in Law's factory.
It made sense. This was a thorolide refinery, after all. Kanan and Hera looked at each other,
shrugged simultaneously, and then turned their weapons on the nearest bat. Multiple blaster shots struck the container at the same place. A sick groan later, the protective material gave way, releasing a fountain of acid. A stricken stormtrooper dropped his weapon and howled so loudly they heard it near the ceiling. The bat's structure failed completely then, unloosing a gusher onto the floor. Now all the stormtroopers were on the move, rushing to alcoves to escape the effluent and throw off their boots and affected armor. Kanan and Hera targeted another bat, and then another, as the tram car advanced. The trick was clearing their way better than any army. He grinned at Hera, hoping to see her smile in return. Instead, he saw her grimace as the tram car ground to a halt. Hera moved to Zaluna's side and punched futilely at the control buttons.
"That's it for the free ride," she said. "Someone knows we're here."
"I would think those guys," Kanan said, pointing down.
Laser shots were striking the ceiling again, but with less accuracy than before. The shooters were all huddled on top of control consoles and other equipment, avoiding the acid flow. He looked at the tram car's control panel.
"I guess I can rewire this thing."
"I know I can," Hera said, scrambling over the side. "You keep shooting. We're running out of time."
Kanan turned to do exactly that when Zaluna poked him. She pointed above to where the frame of the tram car connected with the ceiling. A row of girders ran the length of the line, offering a small, protected crawl space above. But Kanan realized it would be a long hands-and-knees scramble, and it would take someone small and athletic to get up there.
"I don't think I could make it up there," Zaluna said. "But one of you could go."
"We don't know how to access the global communication systems you talked about," Hera said.
"Wait a minute," Kanan said, getting an idea. "Hera, get back in!"
As she did so, he put down his blaster and reached for the repelling gun. Anchoring his legs behind the dashboard, he leaned out and fired at one of the horizontal supports far ahead. The hook snapped taut, and the motorized winder groaned into action. The current might have been cut from the track, but the tram car still moved along it, if slowly.
"We're too heavy," Hera said.
She looked up to a debarkation area far ahead.
"All three of us will take forever. I'll take the upstairs route."
Zaluna looked at her, face fraught.
"Hera, I don't think you should go alone."
"And you shouldn't either," Hera said. "Kanan, make sure she gets there. Get that warning message out."
She climbed onto the side of the car and leapt. Nimbly grabbing the side of one of the supports, she twisted her body around and disappeared into the small horizontal space, safe from the stormtrooper's shots. The cable rewound. Kanan released the hook and prepared to fire again. Zaluna, looking up in vain to catch any sight of the scrambling Hera, shook her head.
"We're going to have to send the message while Vidian's in the room, aren't we?"
"You've come this far, Zal. The hard part's over."
Kanan grinned and fired the grapple. His Jedi teachers had warned him about lying to his elders, but he figured this time it was for a good cause.
"Forager reports being boarded,"
an ensign called from a terminal.
"Incursion force small. 3, maybe 4.
"Stand by."
Captain Sloan walked to the junior officer station and looked over her shoulder. Ultimatum was receiving some security feeds from the collection ship, but it was difficult to see much. For a moment, she thought she caught a glimpse of a running Twi'lek, and then she definitely spotted the arrogant space jockey. She shook her head.
"Is Forager asking for help?"
"No, Captain. Count Vidian is continuing the countdown, waiting for the final injection site to finish its work."
Sloan nodded. Vidian had his own stormtroopers and personal guards over there. It would be unlikely he would need assistance. Still, it was difficult just sitting here, not knowing what to do. It was times like this when she missed being a junior officer herself, having someone around with the answers.
"Captain!
Captain!
Sloane turned to see Commander Chamas rushing onto the bridge toward her.
What is it?
Chamas looked pale.
We have a priority one message for you.
Sloane stopped.
From the Admiralty?
No,
the commander said, breathless.
From the Emperor?
The captain's eyes bulged.
I'll take it in my ready room.
She was already to the door by the time she finished the sentence. Chapter 52. Commander Chamas appeared in hologram, speaking to the Forager command crew.
Your link up to detonation control is live, Count Vidian. We read 10 minutes until the last charges are implanted.
I see it.
Vidian was already watching the progress at the last injection site.
The delays that fool freighter caused weren't fatal.
He was still aggravated by the failure of Ultimatum's fighters to stop the Renegade, but the ship crash landing on Forager hadn't cost him much. The infiltrators had found a way around his stormtroopers, but he had shut down the tramcar line. They'd damaged the refinery area, true, but he had many other harvester vessels on the way. He looked up at the hologram.
Where is Sloane?
The captain is, indisposed.
Chamas seemed agitated.
She'll miss the show.
Do you require assistance against...
No. Forager out.
Vidian cut the transmission, and Chamas disappeared. The cyborg had never had any use for the man, and didn't want to talk to him any more than necessary. Not now, in his moment of success. The sounds of blaster fire came from the southern hallway, one of three portals on the ground floor leading into the command center. Vidian switched to the security cam feed from the hallway and saw nothing unusual at all. Just his stormtroopers standing guard. But something was wrong with the image. It was frozen. The soldiers halted mid-movement like statues, even as the sentries in the room with Vidian were firing through the southern door. They saw something he couldn't.
Lower the security doors on the command floor level.
Heavy barriers slowly descended from the door frames in the three large entryways. Still shooting at whoever was in the hallway, one of the stormtroopers charged the exit, moving to get through it before the door sealed. But a blaster shot caught him mid-stride, and he fell on his side. The massive door came down on the soldier's collarbone. It stopped there, leaving half a meter high space between the bottom of the door and the floor beneath. Vidian heard the blaster fire cease. The opening was too small for the attacker to easily exploit, whoever he was. He checked the cam feed again. It was still on the guard standing around motionless, and the door was still open in the image.
Someone's been interfering with what I can see.
A pinging noise came from his command console. A critical moment had passed. The very last set of Viridium charges were being loaded onto the derrick for descent into Cinda's deep interior. He couldn't afford any more distractions. There weren't blast doors at the entrances on the upper level of his chamber, but he could place his remaining sentries up there. On his command, the stormtroopers dashed up the step to the catwalks. That left one route into the room, by which he might root out his real enemy once and for all. He turned to the command console, his back to the main door. This would be a simple matter. Kanan stood on guard amid the fallen stormtrooper bodies. They'd beaten Hera here, as he expected, but there was no good way to sneak up on stormtroopers on alert. Now there was at least a way into Vidian's chamber. For one of them.
Ready?
Looking at the fallen troopers, Zaluna shuddered.
I don't know.
You knew you'd have to do this alone, didn't you? We can't both sneak in.
I didn't think we'd get this far.
Zaluna put the widget back in her pouch. They'd needed to defeat the surveillance cams on their approach, as on Kalkaron Depot. But the trick didn't work as well when anyone was in the frame. There was no way around that now.
Are you sure you don't want a tutorial on slicing Imperial communication systems?
I would if I could, Kanan said.
He could hear more troops running in the hall, searching for them.
We're out of time.
It happens.
The stormtroopers were closing in. Kanan knelt, protecting the doorway in front of her.
I'm sorry you have to do this, Aluna. You never asked for any of this.
Neither did you,
she said, securing her pouch.
You're a decent person, Kanan. No matter what show you put on for the world, you keep being that way.
With a dutiful salute, Zaluna got down on all fours and peeked beneath the blast door propped up by the body of the unfortunate stormtrooper. She looked back and whispered,
All cyborgs all the time. It'll be just like evading cams.
Then she shimmied under the door. The room was frighteningly large, with lots of computer consoles about. More places to hide. Zaluna crawled behind one. Vidian's cybernetic assistants were here and there, but their minds appeared to be on their work. Zaluna quietly moved from one workstation to another, hoping the artificial ears in the room couldn't hear her joints cracking or her heart pounding.
Oof. It's just like working my way across the floor of that cantina the other day,
she thought. It wasn't, but thinking it helped. Finally, she found a console near the eastern wall that looked to have a connection to the comm system, and a nice little nook behind where she could tap in and send her warning. Text would have to do. She'd pre-written it on the tramcar ride. People of Gorse, beware. She would send it and hope for the best. She was about to connect to the port when a voice came from overhead.
And here's our rodent.
Grabbed by the back of her shirt, Zaluna was yanked upward and outward. Spun about, she saw the moon outside the windows. She saw stormtroopers running down the metal steps to the main floor. And now, she looked directly into the terrifying eyes of Count Vidian. He shook the woman violently. Her bag fell open, spilling forth her blaster and all her devices. Vidian surveyed the instruments.
So they brought a slicer. I knew there was someone else.
His other hand on Zaluna's collar, he brought her back face to face with him.
If you know about surveillance cams, you should have remembered something else. You don't always know where they are.
He turned and hurled her across the room. In the middle of firing at oncoming stormtroopers outside the doorway, Kanan heard Zaluna's cry. The gambit had failed. Kanan shot and shot again, putting his last attackers on the deck. Holstering his blaster, he turned to the door. It had descended farther since Zaluna had gone underneath it. The servos were grinding away, trying vainly to push through the armored obstacle. Kanan placed his hands along the underside of the blast door and heaved upward. His muscles screamed, fighting against both the heavy door and the mechanism holding it in place. Metal groaned, and then something snapped. He forced the door up half a meter from where it had been, where it would go no farther. It was enough. He slid his legs beneath it and rolled, even as the door began to move again. Righting himself, he saw the Count stalking toward Zaluna's motionless body. Kanan stood. Vidian! A stormtrooper charged at Kanan from the left side of the door, his blaster raised. Kanan moved like lightning, grabbing the rifle by its barrel and shoving. The soldier stumbled backward, allowing him to wrest the weapon free. Another trooper came toward him from behind. Kanan spun, smacking his attacker in the side of the helmet with the weapon. Vidian charged. Kanan turned the stormtrooper's rifle around. Three blaster shots slammed point blank into Vidian's body, searing his tunic. Kanan knew that wouldn't stop him, but he had to get the man away from Zaluna. Vidian charged, grabbing for the barrel of the blaster rifle. He ripped it away and shattered it in his bare metal hands.
Hurry up!
The Count said, unruffled.
I have a schedule to keep.
Kanan moved his hand to his holster, before changing his mind. He'd learned something from their first fight. Instead, he dived to the side as Vidian lunged, hitting the ground long enough to leap again onto Vidian's back. Enraged, Vidian clawed at him, raking at Kanan's clothing. His heels digging into the cyborg's metal hips, Kanan wrapped his arms around the back of Vidian's neck and hung on for dear life. Hera darted from hall to hall, careful to avoid stormtrooper details. They were numerous in this end of Forager, and apparently much exercised by her friend's earlier infiltration. Kanan's been here all right, she thought, peering around the corner at the bodies of stunned troopers. Other stormtroopers were tending to their companions and helping to defend their station. She wouldn't be able to follow the path Kanan had taken. Opening a portal leading off the main hall, she stepped into a storage area full of equipment and loading vehicles, all unattended. There were even several hover carts, like the one Kanan used on Cinda. A power forklift caught her eye. A heavy-duty repulsor craft, narrow enough to navigate hallways, with a cab that offered some degree of protection from attackers ahead. Hera grinned. Driving loading equipment was Kanan's trade, but she'd show him what she could do. Zelluna awoke to a nightmare. The sound had reached her first. Vidian stumbling about, driving his back into consoles and walls as he tried to dislodge Kanan. Horrific squawks came from Vidian's speakers as electronic circuits tried to express his animal rage. And yet Kanan kept moving, shifting his hold every time Vidian came close to dislodging him. From headlock to arms around the cyborg's shoulders to a headlock again. The younger man squirmed in response to the Count's every move. Zelluna forced herself to sit up. Her leg hurt horribly where she'd landed, but the only stormtroopers here were on the floor. Vidian's cybernetic assistants milled about near the walls, looking on as the pair wreaked havoc on their workspace. Vidian staggered past again with Kanan, nearly stepping on her. She rolled and saw her pistol on the floor where she'd dropped it. Vidian had a handhold on Kanan's left ankle now, she saw. She had to help her friend. Zelluna dived for the blaster and rose to face the Count. Zell, no! Kanan yelled. Vidian swept forward, releasing his hold on Kanan and reaching for her blaster. She tried to fire, but he had hold of the barrel now. He squeezed. Zelluna saw a flash brighter than lightning as the blaster's energy pack discharged in their faces. She fell backward and saw no more. The flash subsided. Kanan, who had remembered what happened when blaster shots struck Vidian, had leapt clear an instant before the flash occurred. His eyes adjusting to the light, Kanan saw Zelluna collapse. No! Vidian staggered, holding his face in his hands. Kanan quickly surmised the man had overestimated his ability to shake off energy attacks. Blaster bolts were one thing. Power packs exploding point blank were something else. Kanan scrambled past him to Zelluna's side. The woman was still breathing, he saw, but her face was burned. So, he now saw, was Vidian's. Recovered, the cyborg had pulled his hands away from his face. His synth skin facial coating was charred and melted, revealing the metal man beneath. He straightened and stared down the pair.
This ends now, gunslinger. Draw your weapon.
Kanan was about to, when he heard something else. Blaster fire echoing through the huge chamber. He couldn't tell where it was coming from. Looking around, Vidian acted as if he couldn't figure that out either. Nor could he identify the gruesome grinding sound that accompanied it. Then everyone saw it. A massive hover forklift powering its way through one of the upper doorways onto the catwalk above. Two hapless stormtroopers had already been collected by its massive arms, and a third, caught by surprise, tumbled backward over the railing to the command center floor. The vehicle kept on going, smashing through the catwalk barrier. Vidian, astonished at the new arrival from above, dived to the side, even as Kanan moved to protect Zelluna. With a deafening crash, the forklift and its pinned troopers slammed onto the floor between the infiltrators and Vidian. The lifting arm snapped violently off, one nearly taking out the Count's shins. Hera clambered out of the cab. Vidian looked at her in amazement.
You!
That's the trick with surveillance cams, Count. You can't watch all of them at once. She drew her blasters. Vidian started to claw his way up the pile of wreckage toward her.
You should have tried to run me down. You know your blasters won't hurt me.
No, but this might. Hera turned and aimed each one at a different tall viewport.
These viewports aren't magnetically shielded, and these blasters are set on full power. I can decompress this whole compartment.
If you make a move on my friends, or try to give the detonation command, you'll have a whole new address.
Vidian responded with a digital snort.
And which of us do you think would fare better in such an event?
He stepped over to a console and clamped his left hand on it.
I won't be going anywhere, and my respiration is augmented already.
He shook his head and let out an electronic cluck.
But I find what you've said much more interesting. We've come to it at last. You want to save the moon, Cinder?
He looked around at his workers, and at the few mobile stormtroopers recovering and raising their weapons.
Tell me who you're working for, now.
I'm working for everyone. The people of Gorse. The people of the galaxy.
Vidian seemed surprised. Then he laughed.
I think we have an agitator here.
If you destroy the moon, you'll destroy the Thorolide, Hera shouted. The Emperor won't stand for that.
Don't be so sure. I'm smarter than you think.
He turned to face the console.
I am going to do this. And then I am going to find out who each of you really is. And the Empire will destroy everyone important to you.
Kanan glared.
You're a little late on that one.
And your time is running out. 4 minutes until optimal detonation window.
He smiled back at Kanan.
Shall we all wait together?
Chapter 53. Sloane knew back on Calcaron Depot that she had walked into a trap. She just didn't know whose trap it was. The mouthy pilot had told her about Vidian's double identity, his fraudulent test results, and his desire to make the Emperor's deadline by destroying Cinda, and Gorse along with it. She'd thought it all nonsense, and very likely some bizarre test of loyalty from Vidian. After the speaker and his shadowy companion sank into the floor on the hydraulic lift, Sloane had been ready to dismiss the entire thing. But Vidian had laid it on too thick. He tried too hard to ensure her cooperation, insisted too much on speeding the project to a conclusion. Her elevation to permanent Star Destroyer captain, ahead of all the others with more seniority, was more than a bribe. It was a bludgeon, something no one could refuse. And the suggestion that he might have some way of elevating her to admiral, her, a green captain, without a permanent posting yet, was simply insulting to her intelligence, and to the service to which she'd devoted her life. Vidian, the mystery man had said, lived by terrorizing people into meeting quotas. Yet fear of loss of standing was driving him to destroy a resource that the Emperor could have expected would produce for years to come. And Sloane believed him. But there was no reporting the pilot's information up the chain. Not the usual way. It was too explosive. Instead, she'd returned from Calcaron Depot to Ultimatum, where Chamas had arranged a secure connection with Baron Danth, using the contact information the latter had provided. It was highly irregular to involve a civilian, but Danth was the only person she knew who had a hope of directly reaching the Emperor or one of his minions. Silence had followed, during which she'd done her job as ordered. Then, finally, she'd heard back from them in her ready room. The Emperor's people had confirmed that everything the young man said was true. And there was more. Vidian had already launched one scheme to defraud the people of Gorse, starting before the days of the Empire. By secretly purchasing and controlling Minarax Consulting, he had issued the critical report accelerating the end of thorolide mining on Gorse. That single act damaged the guild he once worked for, lifting the interests of the comet chaser industry, which he mostly controlled. On Gorse, mining work had literally gone to the moon, then defacing what had been a famous natural preserve. That had been enough for Vidian, until the past week when he returned to the system for the first time in years, and Sloane's part in it began. On his return to the system, Vidian had cut the last connection between him and Lemuel Tharsa by using her and Ultimatum's power to eliminate the miner's med center where he had convalesced. But that matter was minor compared with the problem he faced meeting the Emperor's new production targets. The newly discovered prospect of destroying the moon for thorolide had been a sudden blessing, and his metal fingers grasped at the reed with full force. There, again, he had used Minrax to lie, asserting that the project would be a successful producer long-term. Minrax and its chief researcher, Lemuel Tharsa. As Vidian had expected, Tharsa's name and reputation had been enough to gain Imperial approval for destruction of the moon. The man and his resume were real. Hadn't Tharsa been a veteran of the Interstellar Thorolide Guild, before dropping out to change his line to consulting? And hadn't he given the okay to dozens of projects over the past several years, some of which redounded to Vidian's personal profit? Yes and no, because the renegade pilot had spoken truly. Vidian was Tharsa. But Vidian had also kept Tharsa's name alive, using it in order to advance his goals and to enrich himself. Moreover, Tharsa's supposed existence helped hide the Count's past from others, who might have found his true origin as a functionary for a guild where everyone was on the take. Less compelling than his self-scripted myth of a military ship designer who had taken on his superiors in the name of the troops. There had been one other consequence. The Emperor hadn't known the truth either. Emperor Palpatine's reach and resources were immense. Little went on in the Galactic Empire that he didn't know about, usually before it even happened. It was a good thing, and it worked to the advantage of all his subjects. But Vidian had spent well to cover his tracks. And perhaps Vidian's past image as a fame-seeking business guru had caused the Emperor to accept his identity as it was described. As long as Vidian was as effective as his reputation advertised, what difference did it make that he lined his pockets playing the show-off? A whole lot, Sloane now understood. Because Kanan, the Emperor's agent, she now accepted, had through her supplied his master with the truth. Vidian had lied about the lunar test results. Before passing the report along, Sloane had Ultimatum's technical staff confirm the man's claim. Within a year, the vast majority of unharvested thorolide from the moon's remains would decompose in space, destroying the Emperor's precious prize. Vidian's aides aboard her ship, the ones that existed anyway, had helped to rig the test, ensuring that false data would be reported. While still docked at Calcaron Depot, her crack technicians had re-examined every probe droid in Ultimatum stores. Vidian's people had done a good job of hiding their tampering, but not good enough. In order to fast-track the destruction of Cinda, Vidian had been forced to prepare his deception too quickly. Of course, the truth would have to come out a year after the moon's destruction. Vidian had to know the result would enrage His Highness. And yet here the Count was, going ahead with the project. Sloane wondered whether the quest for revenge had driven the man mad. But Vidian wasn't insane. He had a plan, outlined in a supplemental document given her by the stranger. An encrypted file from Vidian's computers. The Emperor's experts had cracked it just minutes before, prompting his call. Her anger rose now as she read the file. Cinda would be destroyed, and within a year would be worthless rubble. But by that time, it would be the responsibility of someone else. Likely his underling and greatest nemesis, Baron Lero Danth. The Baron would naturally point at Vidian, who would in turn blame Sloane and her demolition crew's incompetence. He would call her appointment to interim captain premature. And then he would rush to the rescue with another revelation. Something so startling that she could barely believe Vidian had concealed it all this time. It was a fact Mindrax Consulting had discovered 15 years earlier, and that Vidian had bought the firm in order to bury. The moon Cinda did have more thorolite than the night side of Gorse, but Gorse's day side held incalculably more, all buried under the blazing heat of a sun that never left the sky. It would otherwise have been a useless bit of knowledge. Organics couldn't toil in that heat. And, at the time, the suppliers of heat-resistant droids belonged on the side of the Separatists in the Clone Wars. The stuff was unreachable. And when the war ended, it left Danth as the monopoly supplier. Such a prize would make Danth incalculably rich and powerful, she realized. No wonder Vidian had hidden the fact. And it further explained what she had seen on Calkaron Depot. Workers of Vidian's trying to reverse-engineer Danth's droids. Vidian's file described a one-year timetable for having his own droids ready to rush to Gorse's dayside, able to fill the need when Cinda's remains ran out of thorolide. In a sequence of events typical of his preference for neat solutions, Vidian would eliminate a competitor and save the day for the Empire, all while turning a huge profit. But he would destroy Gorse's population in the process. And worse, he would ruin Sloane's career. She wouldn't allow that. And neither would the Emperor. The Emperor had no quarrel with destroying places for short-term gains or with dealing harm to rivals. But the galaxy and all its assets belonged to him. And he alone would decide where and when such actions were taken. That made her next command easy. Walking from her ready room onto the bridge, she knew the next moments would startle her crew as much as her would-be patron.
"Channel to Count Vidian," she said.
Chamas, looking at her with a mixture of curiosity and concern, snapped his fingers. Count Vidian's holographic image appeared.
"Ah, Sloane! You're back just in time! I'm just about to detonate the charges and pulverize the moon."
"Then I am just in time,"
she said, taking a deep breath before continuing.
"Ultimatum technical crews, rescind the detonation control link to Forager."
"What?"
The shimmering Count Vidian looked at her in surprise, as did the very real form of Commander Chamas standing nearby. Sloane clenched her fist.
"And all stormtroopers aboard Forager, in the name of the Emperor, arrest Count Vidian."
Chapter 54. It had happened this way to the Jedi, Kanan remembered. Responding to some command from the Emperor, clone troopers had eliminated the Republic's cherished fighting force. It had been a dark day. By far the darkest in Caleb Doom's young life. Kanan Jarrus usually avoided thinking about it. But seeing the stormtroopers turning on their master, that was both amazing and delicious. even if the Imperials were also pointing their weapons at Kanan and his friends. More troops hoisted open the main door, bringing the total number of white armored guards to a dozen. Up atop the bulk loader, Kanan saw that Hera didn't know what to think. But there was no mistaking Vidian's reaction to the holographic captain.
This is a rash act, Sloane. Have you lost your mind?
You're under arrest for multiple violations of Imperial legal code. Falsification of testimony to the Emperor, profiteering without permission of the Emperor, breach of faith with the Emperor, attempting to damage or destroy strategic assets deemed vital to...
The Emperor!
Vidian finished, anger rising.
You dare invoke his name?
He pointed at Kanan.
These anarchists have poisoned your mind against me. They're Gor's partisans, seeking to hinder our project.
He looked back outside the viewports at the moon.
A project that must go on!
Forget it, Vidian, Sloane said. You won't be destroying anything today.
Kanan could hardly restrain his response. His gambit had worked, after all. Vidian stared as the pair of stormtroopers approached him, as if deciding what to do.
I don't think so.
He looked over to a pair of his cybernetic assistants.
Restore the detonation control, uplink.
Sloane snapped at him.
We already disconnected.
You disconnected nothing. The injection towers, the logistical systems, you only installed them. My workers manufactured them, and my workers can take back control for me at any time.
If that's the way you want it. Death warrant extended to all workers on Forager's Bridge. Stormtroopers, fire!
The stormtroopers executed their order, and several of Vidian's aides, immediately at point-blank range. Vidian yelled something, but Kanan didn't hear it. Blaster fire blazing all around, he hit the deck. Scrambling behind the smashed remains of the forklift cab, he saw Zaluna. She looked rough, her face a scorched mess.
We've got to get out of here.
He looked back to see Hera scrambling down the bulk loader to the floor, dodging shots as she did. All around, Vidian's droids and aides fell. Blaster in hand, Kanan considered joining in, before having second thoughts. For an older man, if any man was still in that body, Vidian had worked into a superhuman rage. Whatever source powered the man's limbs, it had yet to run out of juice. Shaking off a blaster shot from a stormtrooper, Vidian launched himself at his attacker, crushing the man's helmet in his hands. A horrific scream later, and Vidian was on to another stormtrooper. Kanan spotted a newly opened portal to the side. Hera provided cover fire as Kanan lifted Zaluna's body. He rushed to the exit and set her down outside the door.
Wait here, he said.
That's a joke,
she muttered.
Sorry.
Kanan turned back to face the room. Hera, even amid chaos, remembered what they most needed to do.
The comm console!
She called out, pointing past the latest melee. She leapt out from behind the forklift, even as Kanan bounded from the other side. Vidian was already there. The last stormtrooper had already fallen. Kanan realized too late. To a person, Vidian's workers were all down too. Just more workplace casualties and the Count's machine. Only he, Hera, and Vidian remained here alive. And Vidian had just completed punching in a series of keys.
Detonation control link up restored. Just over a minute to spare.
It was the same smug, self-satisfied voice they'd always heard from Vidian. But the man himself was much changed. His tunic was in tatters. His artificial skin and nose had been scorched off his face, leaving just a charred silver mask. Sparks flew from his mechanical joints, yet he was unbowed. He turned back to Kanan and Hera.
I don't know what you told Sloane, but once the Emperor sees my results, it won't matter.
Your results? Hera yelled. Destruction and genocide?
Vidian snorted.
You're going about this wrong, you know. You'll never get anywhere against the Empire. You're too undisciplined, too disorganized.
We'll learn, Hera said, brandishing her weapon. The people will stop you. We'll stop you.
We've had this fight before, the three of us.